an alien starship with an insatiable curiosity about Earth's science fiction and fantasy trivia. The crew, two hapless astronauts who have spent their lives immersed in strange new worlds of the imagination. Now, Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden roam the universe, trying to find the way home, seeking to define the A to Z of SFF.
Marvel, I think Marvel's great. I mean, I know it can be a bit boring with some of the superheroes being a bit all dark and moody, but there's so much weird stuff as well, and I really like the cosmic side of Marvel. I mean, obviously, I would do, you know, I'm a hyper-intelligent sentient starship, so of course I love that sort of stuff, but I'm really pleased that we get a chance to talk now about Marvel's brilliant Doctor Strange. I think that's really good fun. Let's talk about that, shall we?
Yeah, let's talk about Doctor Strange.
Yeah, let's make it clear, we're not talking about the 1978 television film Doctor Strange. We are talking about the Marvel Studios 2016 film.
Okay, right, yes, I can just about remember that one. I've really boned up on the 78 version as well. Oh, that's a bit of a shame. All right, fine, we'll try this, see how I get on. Yeah, the 2016 Marvel Studios version, featuring an all-star cast, including such easy-to-pronounce names as Benedict Cumberbatch and... the guy whose name I can never get right. It's a permanent embarrassment. So Clive.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
That's the chap. Yep. And Tilda Swinton. Phew, that one I can say. So, yeah, and that absolutely sterling cast of people giving us, I mean, okay, it's another origin story, but in this case, it's told with a lot of verve and a lot of humour and some absolutely eye-popping digital effects. Clive, what did you think of Doctor Strange?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, we're kind of pretty deep into Marvel Cinematic Universe territory here. So I think the danger is that it sort of becomes a bit of a template, you know, especially as it's a origin story, even though it's slightly different in that this is the sort of first one bringing, I guess, magic into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, although, you know, it's another kind of superpower, isn't it? So yeah, we have this story of Dr. Stephen Strange, an actual doctor, who is a genius surgeon played by Benedict Cumberbatch, who's an arrogant arse but charismatic with it.
Not seen that before.
No, not at all. Not at all like Tony Stark at all. No.
No.
You know, just in the fact that he has a little goatee beard as well later on. That's, you know, nothing at all like Tony Stark. A move away from the Tony Stark comparisons. Nothing at all like Iron Man. So, yeah, he has a car accident which ends his career as a surgeon because his hands are shattered And no matter how many experimental techniques that he tries to go through, he seems to have lost his way. But an alternative path sort of is set out for him, that there may be an answer to you know, getting his life back together in the East.
Indeed. I mean, people talk about alternative therapies, and in this case, the alternative therapy is basically get yourself to Kathmandu in Tibet and join up with a group of mystical warriors who will help you to become the best that you can be. That is basically the Sorcerer Supreme. I mean, yeah, there's very much that whole sort of Iron Man-esque, sorry, I did it again. Let's you know, talking Tony Stark, but there is definitely an element of you know, that kind of skillful, incredibly skillful, incredibly talented genius type undergoes an awful accident or whatever that renders him almost incapacitated, but he uses that as a springboard to become the greatest part of himself, to become a hero, for want of a better word. It's you know, it's a well-worn path, but I do kind of dig the way it's told here. It's told, like I say, with a lot of verve, a lot of humour, very well paced, and I think the performances do kind of make this a pretty fun piece of genre cinema, and again, you know, it's kind of less superhero-y, I think, than obviously the, you know, your sort of Avengers stuff, the, you know, because of the sort of the mystical bit in there. Yes, they are superpowers, but at the same time, there's more of a sense of they're being explained in terms of they're not explained, and that's kind of the fun of it, really. You get the sort of mention of magic being a kind of hack of reality, source code, but it's left nicely, you know. There's enough hand waving going on to sort of skip past any kind of go on, Clive, I'm rambling now.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have this whole thing about basically there being multiple realities, you know, a multiverse, and the idea that magic in this sense is basically being able to sort of tap energies from different realities. But I think they do quite a nice job of sort of setting up the rules of what is possible, you know, because when they use magic, they're not just sort of, you know, conjuring up spells out of their sort of off the top of their head. You know, they're using them for quite sort of practical purposes, to create shields, stabbing weapons. Or they're using kind of particular artifacts which have stores of magical energy to perform a certain specific task. Whether that's levitating or turning back time, or whatever the thing is. Now, I have to say that I found a lot of the plot a bit by the numbers here. Prior to release, there was a bit of a controversy surrounding this film. Around the casting of Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. The Ancient One in the comics is your standard trope of ancient wise Asian dude who is a font of wisdom and knowledge. And into this Asian part, they cast a white Celtic woman. So, yeah, that didn't go down too well, and there were sort of But, you know, to counter that, the director Scott Derrickson basically said that he was trying to get more diversity in, and that was, and part of that was to get more women into the cast. So, yeah, it's, I mean, I think she's very good in the role, Tilda Swinton.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and I suppose it does push it away from, you know, I mean, like Iron Fist, you know, the comic origin of Doctor Strange has a bit of that, you know, white man goes into, you know, an Asian world and learns their ways and becomes better at it than them, which is it's slightly troubling, you know, archetype to use. So I guess that's slightly, that sort of takes away from that a little bit. And also the fact that it's not just the Kathmandu, we find it's not just the sort of Kathmandu center, that there are these kind of places of power around the globe which serve to protect us from you know, shenanigans going off in different parallel worlds.
Sanctums, basically.
Sanctums, yeah. One in London, one in New York, and I think there's one in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, yeah, which is kind of the setting for the final battle. Obviously, the New York setting kind of ties back to the comic in that Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorium was on Bleecker Street in New York's Greenwich Village, and that's where this is set. Although, you know, at this point in the origin story, it's obviously not his home, kind of until the end, I guess, where he's given the keys to the door, as it were.
Yeah. So anyway, I think we were slightly off on a tangent, sort of describing the sort of controversy surrounding the film. But you know, going back to my point about it feeling a little bit generic. It's that whole trope of that hero's journey of the hero going to the wise mentor figure to learn the ways of power. And this is where we are going to get into, I think we're going to have to hit some spoiler territory here. So, yeah, you know, if you haven't yet seen Doctor Strange, then you might want to, you know, sort of hit your time slip device here. And then come back to us in another time dimension. What you have, yeah, I think it's that thing about the, you know, that story beat of killing the mentor, which just, it's, you know, I mean, we've seen it in so many, particularly films at this point. What with the kind of influence of the sort of Joseph Campbell hero with a thousand faces thing as spread via, you know, George Lucas and Star Wars in particular. And this does feel, it does feel like it treads very heavily in these beats. Now, it does it with charm and humour, don't get me wrong, but I felt like a bit of a lack of emotional connection to the film.
Right, okay. I can kind of understand why you'd feel that, but at the same time, I think the performances and the general charm of the dialogue and the writing do kind of help to pull you along from that. Yeah, okay, it is very much A meets B into C and so on and so forth. So the structure is kind of familiar, but at the same time, you could level that accusation to probably 90% of movies that came out in 2016. So
quite possibly, and don't get me wrong, you know, I did enjoy this movie. I felt like I knew what was coming. I felt like they put a lot of, most of the invention went into the kind of eye-popping visuals, which we should probably talk about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's talk about those visuals, because there's some wild stuff going on there. Obviously, Doctor Strange, the heyday of Doctor Strange came about in the sort of Vietnam era, the sort of late 60s, and it was very much this deeply psychedelic experience, and that feel is very, very much reflected in the movie. It is extraordinarily trippy in places, shall we say. Certainly the early experiences that Strange has when he first enters the teaching, when he's first introduced to the teachings of the Ancient One, are just wildly out there. Just all sorts of crazy mandalas sort of whipping around and zipping through many, many different alternate universes. So even down to the sort of colour choices, I mean, towards the end, the colour choice of the dark dimension that he has to go to battle the final big bad Dormammu is just, the colours are just extraordinary. It's certainly the most colourful superhero movie I've seen in a long time, which cheers me up no end, because it's all too easy for these things to sort of go down that whole either teal and orange or sort of just muted blues, and this is very much not that at all. It's a very bright and you know, verging on the almost too bright, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, in that respect, I guess it sort of takes its cue a bit from Guardians of the Galaxy, where, it's going back to the comics, really, isn't it? Which is what I like, you know. I mean, I was a fan of Scott Derrickson's work before this film. You know, I liked his, which is mainly in the horror genre, things like Sinister. And so I think he does a good job here. And it's obvious that a lot of the effects, heavy sequences, are designed for 3D, which the film sort of was projected in. There's also heavy influence of Inception in some of the visuals, especially when they're fighting in the cities. And they're sort of creating these sort of mirror sort of pocket universes and sort of manipulating gravity and the surroundings around them, you know.
You end up with this M.C. Escher kind of thing where everything's folded in on itself and the battles are taking place on the side of buildings and the whole thing just takes on this aspect where you're just not sure where up and down are.
Yeah, and it leans very heavily on that, and it is fun, and it does give it a different feel to the other Marvel universe films that we've seen thus far, definitely. Yeah. Which is good, because otherwise it would feel incredibly sort of familiar to the point of perhaps being a little bit rote. But this does, you know, it is lively and in places quite funny and witty. I mean, Benedict Wong as Wong, the librarian, in Kathmandu, has a lot of funny moments. And even just sort of little bits of physical comedy. The cloak of levitation that Doctor Strange gets has a bit of a mind of its own, and there's a couple of nice sort of bits of physical comedy there. Yeah, it's there's a lot of fun stuff. However, I feel I'm being a bit of the sort of negative one here, but perhaps I've been influenced by Dormammu here. But it's that Marvel has a bit of a villain problem in some of their movies here. And Mads Mikkelsen, God bless him, he does his absolute best here, but he's really not given very much here, is he? He plays our main villain, which is Caecilius, who's this kind of breakaway ex-pupil of the Ancient One, we have a sort of early sequence where he breaks into the Ancient One's sanctum and steals this spell from one of the forbidden books, which will allow him to open up the gateway to Dormammu's dark dimension. And which provides the sort of central kind of, you know, conflict of the movie, you know, once you get beyond training up Strange. He communes with Dormammu, which gives him and his followers, glittery eyeshadow, it appeared.
Certainly, yeah, they end up looking very glam rocky, really, don't they? Which is, you know, and obviously with the costumes they're all wearing, which is all sort of heavy on the complicated collars and the interesting breeches. They do end up looking like actually, glam rock's probably the wrong way. It's much closer to the New Romantics, you know, again with the complicated face makeup as well as the vaguely piratical costumes. But that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, it's okay that they look like they might be going into a Visage video. It's absolutely fine. It's less okay that it feels like the villain part of the story is perhaps not the strongest.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, I have to say, I did actually like the big climax of the film, where, I mean, we have this talisman that Stephen Strange, you know, uses, called the Eye of Agamotto, which can be used to sort of turn back time a little bit and sort of reset things. So you have this, you know, this inverts the sort of general everything blows up at the end thing from a lot of superhero movies to everything puts itself back together again, which is rather nice. And I thought it was, I thought the actual sort of solution to how you defeat Dormammu, who's this uber powerful force, it was actually quite clever. It was, you know, it was kind of, you know, sort of outsmarted, you know, it's, I guess, in a sort of similar way to perhaps the end of Constantine, which you know was taken from the comic. I know that sort of double, that triple cross thing. I thought it was quite a sort of nice, sort of elegant way to sort of wrap it up, you know.
Oh, definitely, definitely. It's kind of always nice to see a superhero movie where the ending doesn't just preclude on two characters sort of wailing on each other until one of them falls over. There's very much a sense of Stephen Strange having the smarts to be able to sort of outthink an opponent that he can't possibly outfight. So I'm with you, Clive. I did kind of really dig that moment, and again, nicely done. Although, as you say, with the villain problem, you've got Caecilius, who's kind of like, although he's the villain of the piece, he's really sort of doing everything with the backing of the real big bad, who you only really meet in the last sort of 10 minutes of the thing, and you definitely get that feeling. Well, to the point where it does say at the end, Doctor Strange will return, that we're going to see more of Dormammu, and hopefully, you know, see exactly. There's obviously more plans there. Whether this all is going to tie into a bigger end story, you know, how that ties into the way the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, obviously, we know all this from being on our high mountain top 500 years into the future, but you know, you guys are just going to have to wait and see just how that all ties into whether Dormammu meets up with Thanos, especially seeing as we've still got that spoiler alert on, haven't we, Clive? That's still honking away in the background.
Yeah, massive spoilers. I think perhaps the other point of why you know, the villains don't quite work is that you feel that there is that sort of Marvel thing of they're trying to set things up for future movies, right? So
sure,
you have the Chiwetel Ejiofor character, whose name is
Mordo.
Carl Mordo, who, you know, is one of the good guys throughout this, but he seems to be, you know, turning away from the path of the Ancient One, doesn't he? As we're going through, because he's has very different ideas about how things should be done than Doctor Strange. So he actually gets quite a nice arc, but I think perhaps the sort of villain maybe suffers from because you know they spend time on this other subplot perhaps too much. And then obviously you get Rachel McAdams as Doctor Strange's love, one of his fellow doctors, and you know that's one of those sort of love stories where it just feels a little bit like she's there initially there to sort of tell him to be less of an asshole, and then it almost becomes like a sort of comedy bit that he keeps turning up all bloody or with. You know, sort of in a ER, like dressed in strange costumes, and she's like, "Where the hell have you been? And what the hell are you wearing?" You know, which you know, which is quite fun, but it does feel a little bit of a waste of you know Rachel McAdams, who's a fantastic actor. You know, I would though like to sort of single out Michael Giacchino's music in this.
Yeah, it's very, very good all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the prior Marvel movies had, I think by deliberate choice, sort of stayed away from that kind of, you know, what had become thought of as a little bit old school, that idea of having a hummable theme, you know, that it would be, you know, they had scores which were functional, but they didn't necessarily sort of stay with you in the same way that, say, you know, the theme to Richard Donner's Superman stayed with you.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, it seems to be, you know, conscious sort of this sort of idea of, okay, we will have a Doctor Strange theme. And I quite like it.
Yeah, me too. It goes nicely prog rocky towards the end of the credits as well, which I kind of also dig an awful lot. You know, let's not go into my love of prog rock, because we could be here for an awful lot longer than we are already. But no, suffice it to say, it's great to have really properly distinctive music in a Marvel movie, and this works brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Scott, you know, screenplay by Scott Derrickson, C. Robert Cargill, John Spates, I think, gets a credit on the story, and you know, it does a good job, I think, of cramming in a lot of sort of comic stuff, feeling true to that, and ticking all the boxes it needs to tick. Because there can be a sort of wearying thing of feeling like, oh, okay, you know, this is just, you're just watching like 2 hours of setup for like, you know, Avengers 16, you know, that it becomes, it's all about the long game, you know, and really, you know, we want an entertaining film now, thanks, you know.
Yeah.
Much as that's all good. And here we have, there's a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene. One sort of to tease perhaps future develops in Doctor Strange world, and one to very much tie into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Because it's a bit of a standalone film in some respects, unlike say Ant-Man, where you had, you know, scenes where they brought in other Avenger characters, and you know, it felt very tied to the Marvel and Avengers universe. In this, it's just more little visual cues in the background, the Avengers building. Some visual, you know, sort of verbal references, but yeah, then that mid credit scene, it roots it. It's like, okay, yes, we are in the same world as these people.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but when you boil it down, it is an entertaining, you know, superhero movie. With some fun sort of trippy graphics going on, and you know, and it's quite funny, you know, and you know, the leads are perfectly sort of charming, and I enjoyed it, and you know, it didn't sort of leave me sort of aghast at the idea that we might get more Doctor Strange in the future.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people, when this first came out, obviously had the sort of there's always a feeling with certain Marvel movies that it's going to be a bit underwhelming. It's going to be a bit kind of, well, what's the point to this? And then it kind of exceeds people's expectations, like the Guardians of the Galaxy did, to a certain extent, Ant-Man as well. And I genuinely felt that Doctor Strange has an awful lot going for it. It's a bit more of a romp, which is always good to see. And you know, it's there's plenty going on. It never really takes itself massively seriously, which is important, I think, in any kind of Marvel-esque, superhero-esque kind of cape movie. It's just, you know, let's be a bit playful with it. Let's gallop along and just see how much fun we can have with this. So, yeah, in that aspect, I genuinely enjoyed it an awful lot. And I think it's one of those Marvel movies that kind of works as a standalone. As Clive said, there's a few little hints and wrinkles to the wider Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I think if you wandered away before any of the mid or end credit sequences, you wouldn't be missing anything major there. So, okay, Curiosity, are you happy enough with our take on the Marvel Cinematic Universe's Doctor Strange?
Oh, guys, thank you so much. Yeah, Doctor Strange, what a great, fun piece of work that is. And, that Dormammu, he's a bit of a nasty one, isn't he? I get the feeling there's going to be more we're going to see from him in the future. But, yeah, we love Bendy Wonk or whatever his name is, and all those guys. And it was just, yeah, it's a good, solid piece of superhero movie action, so... Yeah, great. Go see it, because you know, if you don't go and see it, then the huge spoiler warning that we've got all over this means that you won't be able to listen to this episode. So you really must do that. So great stuff. Okay, guys, let's head in the opposite direction to the Dark Dimension, because nobody wants to go there, and we'll head over that way somewhere. That'll be fine. Okay, right, we're firing up the engines, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Dead of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickens and Clive Ashingham, with additional voice talents of Maria Thomas. Music and editing are by Daniil Hallow at the Creation Station of Cavishing, all the waveform you can eat. Do you want to know more? Search for the A to Z of SFF on iTunes, Facebook and Twitter, or check out www.theatozofff.com.